Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome along. We're nearly there, everybody. The big season curtain lifter, Alaves versus Getafe, unless they change the kickoff time, which they might have to. And then we'll get into the real big one. Sevilla, who've lost 10 players and signed five at a profit of 30 million euros against Rayo Vallecano, who've been kicked out of the ground because it's a death trap. But unperturbed have launched a season ticket campaign, complete with a 15% increase in prices. Meanwhile, the big two are locked in a war over Rodri, Ballon d'Or and World Cup winning legend, and an injury-prone 30-year-old is out of contract in a year. Barca seem to be winning the race, but since we were last here, Vinny has signed on again for Real Madrid, and Yann Diamanda has arrived for over 100 million euros. We will get the smart verdict on that. We'll bring you up to date with some of the refereeing changes and have a look at the state of play as we head into the new season. Terry Gibson is here. Of course, Terry Gibson is here. And we are delighted to be joined by Rory Barlow, who is a Madrid-based Spanish football journalist, originally from Scotland. Welcome along, Rory. It's great to have you on board. Rory and I worked together. I worked for you, didn't I, for Football España, writing some stuff. But he's in the transfer market at the moment with interesting stuff down the line to come. Thank you for joining us. Let's dive straight into the transfers. So, Terry, we discussed Vinny. And last time we were here, and you sort of cynically suggested the whole Arsenal thing was just a ploy to get a pay rise out of Real Madrid. Is this the right resolution that he's staying and he's extended his contract?
I think so. At 26, you don't leave Real Madrid unless they have finished with you, to be honest. And I've seen the wages for him. I've seen the published wages allegedly for the Real Madrid squad. Arsenal not getting anywhere near that. I think their wage bill is four times the amount of Arsenal. So there's big money to be earned at Real Madrid. And Arsenal were never going to get near his demands. And I kind of feel it suited Arsenal to be involved in this as well. I'm pretty sure if Vinicius' entourage were searching around Europe for clubs that they could use in these circumstances, I think Sergio Ramos has done it in the past and always ended up signing another deal with Real Madrid. And if Arsenal appeared to be the only ones that were interested in actually getting involved in 3 weeks of speculation, they never denied the story. They never came out and specifically said, no, we're not interested. I think it kind of suited them to kid on with their fans that we're in the big league now. And if a player like Vinicius is available, we've got the money to buy him, we've got the money to give him his wages, probably knowing full well that it was not going to happen. But I think it suited them to show that maybe the ambition the club has, and the only people that fell for it were Arsenal fans. Nobody else fell for it. They pretty much everyone you spoke to realised that it was unlikely he would come to the Premier League. And if it was, probably Arsenal would probably, with all due respect to know the current champions, that probably wouldn't be his first choice. But it's turned out as most people expected it would.
So, Rory, is that the view that you had of the view from Spain? Was he always signing for Madrid again?
I always had quite a lot of scepticism that he would ever go to Arsenal. Not because of kind of anything to do with Arsenal, more just Vinicius has never really seemed like he wanted to play in the Premier League. I mean, every time publicly that he actually spoke, he was obviously very complimentary of Real Madrid, said, I want to stay there, I want to be there for my entire life, which, of course, you do if you're in front of the press and you're at Real Madrid, because if you don't, then it starts a story. But on the other hand, it just never really seemed like he was kind of playing the game with Arsenal. It was more like his agents were. And we've had 2.5 years of this with kind of Saudi Arabia, of course. They were kind of involved a couple of years back, and it always kind of felt like it was a ploy, as you say, to kind of get a better deal from Real Madrid, and he's got one.
Yeah. Is it a good signing for Real Madrid, Terry? Have they spent their money wisely?
It's a lot of money, but I think so. I think, I mean, he has got his detractors, and the opinion is split. I think by and large, Real Madrid fans do like him and did want him to stay, but there are people, supporters at Real Madrid, clearly, when you see the players that are singled out for criticism, he's one of the high profile ones. But I think it's the right thing for Real Madrid to do. As I say, at 26, his best years are still to come. He's a fabulous footballer, and there, you know, his attributes are obvious. His weaknesses are obvious, and it kind of suits him still, and it suits Real Madrid still for them to be together.
And what about the signing of Yann Diamanda then, Rory, as well? So we had Terry's view, because Terry, obviously, you saw him when he had a €20 million release clause about 5 minutes ago, and you thought, oh, he's quite good. So it's a lot of money, isn't it, to play for this fella? My honest admission is I haven't watched him in the Bundesliga, so I don't know what progression he's made. But yeah, there we are. It's another big signing, and this is Real Madrid, isn't it? They gamble big.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's more almost about kind of the market that you see a player of his kind of quality come out in the Bundesliga, have one incredibly good season, and at 19 years of age, that's just what he costs these days. I do kind of like it for Real Madrid and the fact that we've not really seen them have kind of a balanced front three for quite some time. I mean, I was kind of casting my mind back, and of course you've had Fede Valverde on the right-hand side, and he does add a lot. Going down that flank and kind of running into space. But since Gareth Bale was kind of at the peak of his powers, we've not had someone to almost kind of distract from that left-hand side, which has been Vinicius in recent years, before that Hazard even, and now Mbappe obviously kind of falling onto that side as well. So I think the fact that he will kind of drag the attention away, or you can't just kind of load up on one side to kind of stop Real Madrid, that will really help. But of course, it is a risk at 19 years of age. I mean, we saw, I don't think Diamande is in the same kind of bracket as Mastantuono. I think he's further on in his development, but we saw the difficulties that he had a couple of months in at 19 years of age. As you say, he was playing for Leganés 2 years ago, and he wasn't even kind of a regular starter for them. So it is a big, big jump.
Yeah,
Yeah, my issue is with the career of Diamande. He came to Leganés as a B player 18 months ago from an academy in the United States, not from a club. So I guess any fee that was paid to an agent to bring him to the Leganés. And you could see the potential, and he improved the team that eventually went down, but he did give them a chance of staying up. So you could see why, although he was bought for the B team, they'd obviously seen something in training, gave him a chance in the first team, and there he was to stay until they got relegated. Now, my case is his buyout clause shouldn't have been 20 million then. It just seems completely far-fetched. The buyout clauses work on, if you're a player and you've got 20 million buyout clause, your salary should reflect that. There was no way his salary coming from America, from an academy to Leganés, would have reflected a 20 million buyout clause. So when you said to me, and I said to you, he's got potential, this one, a Premier League club or another club in Spain would definitely take him. I thought for about 2 or 3 million buyout clause, and it was 20. And then a year later, he's now going for over 100 million. There's been issues with I think what held the deal up. Has it got? I'm not sure it's actually gone through yet, but he's gone through about two or three different agents as well, and they're fighting amongst each other over share of the spoils. So it's a little bit, I'm sort of a little bit murky behind the scenes in how he wasn't at a club at 19, at this academy, in the United States, into Spain, into Germany, back to Spain, and in the space of 18 months. As I say, that buyout clause from Leganés, no way reflected it would have reflected his salary that he would have been on as a young potential winger for the B team, but they can play him in the first team if he's good enough. It's a weird old transfer.
Yeah, there you go, Rory. There's a go and get hold of him and ask him for his life story, how he ended up, where he's ended up. I need you both to talk about Rodri. So where's he going? Where should he go? I mean, he's a legend, Rodri. I know I was sort of being slightly disrespectful describing him as a 30-year-old who's almost out of contract, but he is. So Terry, is it where should he end up? Who needs him most? And where should he go?
I think Real Madrid need him most. It's the player they haven't had. I mean, Tchouaméni showed good form towards the end of the season, but it's that they've been searching. Xabi Alonso wanted Zubimendi, didn't get him. They've been searching around for a holding midfield player since Casemiro left the club. So probably Real Madrid, probably. But it's Real Madrid are not that interested in buying defensive midfield players. They want to buy the young 19-year-old wingers and creative midfield players. And so, but I understand why Barcelona would want him. Clearly, I mean, it's there is potential at Barcelona. They do have players that play that holding midfield role. We've seen De Jong, Eric Garcia. Casado doesn't really play that position, but he can play there. Marc Bernal is developing as a player that I didn't think he was going to be. You know, he came in and he thought, there's the obvious replacement for Busquets, and he's similar to Rodri, but then he starts scoring goals and he's playing in the attacking third and looks slightly different to what I anticipated he was going to be. So Rodri is, I'm not saying it's a must for Barcelona, but I totally get why they would want to bring him in.
And Rory, where do you think? So you're a bit more on the Madrid journalism scene. Well, consider more on the Madrid journalism scene than we are. Put it that way. So where do you think he'll end up? And how much? If the answer is Barcelona, how much of a blow is that to Real Madrid?
Yeah, I think it's a huge blow. I think, to be honest, I would be asking, if I was a Real Madrid fan, what happened in those kind of 2 weeks where it seemed like Real Madrid were destined to sign him, and then all of a sudden he wants to go to Barcelona. Why did that deal not get completed in those 2 weeks? Because Real Madrid have the money. I think Rodri wanted to go there, or it seemed like he did. There was lots of reports that he'd agreed terms. And so why did Real Madrid not get that deal done? If you look at the rest of their business, every single transfer has kind of been completed quite quickly. It's been kind of a week or so max between the first reports coming out and the deal being done. I think it maybe speaks to perhaps kind of wider doubts at Real Madrid. I think Florentino Perez at least wasn't necessarily convinced about signing Rodri at his age. Coming off a back surgery, coming off an ACL 2 years ago, I think Perez was perhaps needing to be convinced, and maybe Rodri did kind of feel that he wasn't maybe the one that Perez wanted above all. And I think, as Terry says, I mean, Tchouaméni has been looking for a partner at Toni Kroos since Toni Kroos left, and it's quite a glaring error from Real Madrid if they don't address that this season.
What about I was asked about if Rodri goes to Real Madrid? When it appeared he was going to Real Madrid, I was asked on TalkSport, does that make Real Madrid favourites for the title? And I said, yes. It would make that much difference. Yeah, of course he's got to be fit. The back surgery might be an issue, but it doesn't appear he's walking around and appears as if he's going to be okay. But that was the difference he would have made to Real Madrid. But now Barcelona, if they do get him, it does swing the balance back towards them.
What about Bernardo Silva in terms of Madrid needing a wise head, someone to tidy up their midfield? Does he do that job?
Yeah, I think so.
Despite, I was just going to make a joke, Jose Mourinho doing his best to slag him off in his first pre-season game. This bloke's been away for 3 weeks. He's done no work. And I'm thinking, so what? Let him. It's the three-week holiday. And it's... That's a real good way to endear yourself. Yeah, after you, Rodri. I can't believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bernardo Silva does at least provide some kind of organisational presence, somebody that kind of understands where the ball should go at the right time. To a certain degree, I kind of get Real Madrid maybe not pursuing another midfielder, because you look at the options and you're saying, well, there's not another Rodri on the market. So are we going to spend 70, 80 million on a player that we're not quite convinced by? Do we take a punt on a younger player? Maybe Bernardo Silva is the closest you can get. But then I look at the wider sense of that midfield, and you're probably looking at Tchouaméni, maybe Bernardo Silva, maybe Guler as well in there, Valverde. And I'm still not convinced by a trio that includes those three. So, yeah, I like Bernardo Silva's signing in general. Is he necessarily the fix that they need? I'm not entirely convinced.
So then switching over to Barcelona, if they get him and the finances, is the money there, Rory? Or is this dependent? Will they not be able to register him until they've got somebody out?
Yeah, I mean, I think any Barcelona fan or anybody who's been covering Barcelona over the last 3 years is not entirely ready to say it's a done deal until he's wearing that shirt and until he's been presented, until he's actually on the pitch and registered. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's all done and dusted now. But I think if he does come, I think it's very bad news for Frenkie de Jong. I think it tells you that Barcelona are no longer convinced that he's the person to kind of be in that midfield alongside Pedri. And if you look at De Jong, I mean, he's only a year younger than Rodri. It's not like he's kind of up and coming still. I mean, he's been around for years. He's a player player that divides opinion. And I think Rodri very much convinces everyone. Again, as you say, if he's fit, I think it improves him a great deal. And De Jong, for all his kind of qualities and flaws, there was always that kind of doubt about defensively, can Pedri and De Jong hold down the midfield in those biggest games? I'm not sure we ever got a firm answer on that, whereas I think Rodri gives you a little bit more of that kind of defensive know-how. On the other hand, devil's advocate, Pedri and Rodri, they didn't quite work as well as Rodri and Fabian did during the World Cup.
Yeah, Frenkie de Jong's out, isn't he? They're saying to after, maybe after Christmas, maybe longer,
So that
depending.
frees up the money short term. They can basically use deregister him and use the money. Is that right?
And players are going to be sold, aren't they? Araujo has gone out on loan. Ferran Torres does appear as if he's going to be going to PSG. I read there were some morning reports that Jules Koundé was being coveted by Premier League clubs as well. So there are players there. Casado, Rooney Badaji didn't go on the recent tour. They look like they might be outgoings as well. Barcelona have got to do better on themselves. I mean, Real Madrid do it well, but Barcelona don't. I'm even surprised at Araujo going on loan with an obligation to buy, because that doesn't always work out, that loan is converted into a permanent transfer.
So
They get
that's so
wages
he,
off, but no fee.
so he's going to Liverpool, isn't he, for this season? But there's no obligation. So 55 million, is that right? Am I getting this right? But if it's an option, then it's almost nothing, is it? It's nothing for Barcelona. You've always got an option to buy Araujo for 55 million to sell him to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at Rashford, it's the same case. You kind of have a 30 million option. And when it came to kind of April, May, well, Barcelona was saying, well, maybe we'll give you kind of 15, 20 million and just kind of chancing their arm. And eventually they never pulled the trigger on that. So I think unless Araujo performs to the level where other teams think he's worth more than 55 million, it doesn't really matter. It's only really of benefit to Liverpool. And maybe Barcelona say, well, his buyout's 55, so let's start negotiating down from that point. But on the whole, yeah, I think it's still a good deal for Barcelona in some senses because Araujo needs to play. I think the more he goes without playing, the less likely it is that he ever gets back to a useful level for Barcelona to either sell or to keep. So ultimately, it needed to happen, but at the same time, financially, maybe it doesn't give them much of a boost this season.
And he's got time for Araujo because, I mean, he's been derided in the past couple of years, mainly because of the sendings off. But before that, I don't think Barcelona would have even considered selling him for 55 million. And, you know, we had that spell where Xavi played him right back against Vinicius, and he was a go-to guy for the first team. He was popular with the fans. So if he can get that form back and maybe play in a different system than what he's had to play at Barcelona, where I thought it would suit him because he's the quickest of the centre backs at Barcelona, but he didn't seem to pick up the habit of squeezing up, playing on the halfway line, and didn't appear to have any confidence in it, and then made reckless decisions when he was charging back towards goal. So there is the potential there. I mean, his obvious attributes are there, aren't they? He's big, strong, powerful, quick. He's decent on the ball. He's a good defender. So there is the potential there to turn it around where Barcelona can actually get him playing again. If he plays, that's the problem. I read he was taken to Liverpool as cover, defensive cover. But I imagine that he will get enough playing time. If he gets off to a good start, then it might be a deal that suits everyone.
Ferran Torres, are you selling him, Rory? Are you happy to sell him if you're Barcelona?
I think Barcelona, they might be reluctant to sell Ferran Torres just on the off chance that he does become as consistent as maybe they would have hoped at PSG. And of course, Luis Enrique, if he takes another Barcelona player, Ousmane Dembélé, of course, went, made that move and then became a Ballon d'Or winner. So I think there might be kind of a residual fear over it. I think Ferran Torres at Barcelona is probably never going to fully convince Barcelona that he's the number nine that should be starting every single week. And for that reason, I think it makes sense to sell him. If you give him a new contract, he's only got a year left on this deal. So you basically have to give him a new big contract this season to lock him down until he's kind of 30, 31. And yeah, do you want to hand that money to somebody that you're not convinced is your number nine? Probably not. So I think it makes sense to sell him, even if it's slightly kind of painful on the one regard because he's a World Cup winner, he scores the winning goal, he's good friends with Pedri. I think he kind of buys into the Flick idea well. But on a kind of very cold, kind of cutthroat basis, if you're looking at your kind of squad building as Deco, I think it makes sense to sell him now.
I've almost forgotten he'd scored the winning goal, the World Cup final. I'm joking. He's constant, isn't he? Doing a world tour of watching the goal with fans, and he's. I get why PSG want him. They don't play with an obvious centre forward, and Ferran Torres has never been that obvious centre forward. And he was really good. He was good last year. I mean, he really competed with Lewandowski to be the main striker. He was good in the World Cup. Most of the games he came on in the World Cup, he did make a difference. So playing that for PSG might suit him.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Dembele plays down the middle. They have a fluid front three. And Ferran Torres has shown he can play down the middle. He can play wide on both sides. I think that's a deal. And also, I think there's a clause with Manchester City that if he renews a contract, more money was due to go to City as part of the original deal. So hence the reason I think it's about €8 million. They don't want to pay that for a player, as Rory said, they're not convinced is what Hansi Flick wants.
Where else are we? Any other big transfer news with the big clubs? Obviously, Julian Alvarez. Are we going to forget about that? Is that going to happen? Terry, you've always been convinced it would happen one day. Rory, you think? He plays for Atletico. My sympathy is Atletico on this. He plays for them. They pay him a load of money. They didn't sign him that long ago. So just carry on playing for them.
Yeah, I think if Atleti were to let him go at this point, I think almost the public kind of humiliation aspect of it, having said he's not going anywhere, we won't sell him to anyone, and least of all Barcelona. I think if you then sell him to Barcelona, I think you just lose all of your credit, and ultimately kind of the players themselves at Atletico Madrid who are left behind are thinking, well, if he's our star and we've gone out of our way to say that we're not selling him to Barcelona, and then you do in the end, where is this club going? What's the kind of direction of the club? So I think, yeah, Julian Alvarez has to stay at Atletico Madrid for Atletico Madrid. I think Barcelona probably, similarly to Vinicius and Arsenal almost, it benefits them to kind of keep the story alive and to say that we're still going for a number nine, when maybe Deco can then go and sign somebody else if Ferran Torres leaves as well, or kind of, yeah, just keep the kind of fire burning for future seasons.
They need a forward. They need a centre forward. Or it doesn't have to be Lewandowski centre forward. As you were saying with PSG, they don't play with a sort of, you know, an old fashioned nine, but they need someone up there, don't they? As to play centrally up the top, it can't be like Dani Olmo. It can't just be these flying wingers and stuff, can it?
No, I still think Alvarez will end up there somehow. I know it's wrong and it's right that he should stay at Atletico Madrid, but I just think player power has its methods. And it's Atleti are probably hoping. I think he's due back any day now, isn't he? And he's allegedly going to see Simeone to let him know that he doesn't want to stay at Atleti and he wants to go to Barcelona. That becomes a problem then. I mean, as Robbie said, it becomes a problem if you sell him, but it also becomes a problem if you keep him, because you don't know how it's going to spill over to the rest of the team. You don't know how it's going to spill over to him. Do they want that aggravation? I still think Barcelona, there's no replacement for Lewandowski. And looking around and thinking, the only solution I could think is don't buy Anthony Gordon, don't buy Adeyemi, perhaps don't buy Rodri. Just go make an offer for Haaland. Use all that money and go for Erling Haaland. City's a different club now. It's why Rodri's leaving. It's one of, you know, Bernardo Silva. It's Pep was a big attraction for players to go to City. Some of those players that went to Man City had no knowledge of the history of Manchester City Football Club, other than the fact they had new riches. And then suddenly when Pep goes there, it becomes an attraction. So it's not a surprise to see Rodri leave. I think Erling Haaland, with his World Cup, I was out in the States and he was so popular in America. He was one of the focal points of the whole World Cup was this big Norwegian and centre forward that plays for Man City, that was leading the line from Norway, and become such a huge attraction. And with all due respect to City, they're not Real Madrid, they're not Barcelona. And it's inevitable that he's going to have to go there at some stage. And if I was Barcelona, I would have chucked everything at it this summer and saved the 80 million for Anthony Gordon, sell some players, done by Adi Ami. It's the most obvious one to me was there's no other replacement for Lewandowski. And he's still scoring goals now. I know it's a different level. But when you see the goals he's scoring in the MLS, you think he's still doing exactly the same. He might not be able to tear around all over the pitch, but he never misses a chance. And those strikers of that profile are few and far between. So it's but Barcelona, they do need a centre forward.
Right. So we've done the big transfers that might happen, that haven't happened, etc. Let's briefly just pause and explain. Rory can explain to us your story, because people they might be familiar with your work, but or you might be a new face to them, or a new voice to them. So you're in Madrid, but as we can hear, you're not originally you're not Spanish. So tell us your story of how you became a Spanish football journalist.
Yeah, what gave it away about my accent? this isn't pure Madrileño. I kind of got into Spanish football very young, listening to such great exponents of the game, such as John Driscoll and Terry Gibson. I've always been kind of a fan of Spanish football growing up. And then when I went to university, did a year abroad in Spain and that in Barcelona, and that kind of helped things, especially in the era of kind of Messi, Suarez, Neymar. That didn't hurt. And then kind of after university, I moved back out here to Madrid, and I was working at a website called Football España, where John kindly collaborated with us, giving us his thoughts on a kind of monthly column. And I was there kind of for 3-4 years. I was the editor there, and then I've been kind of working with kind of various outlets, as we all kind of do, kind of BBC, CNN, that kind of thing. But mostly based in Madrid the last 4 years, and covering quite closely kind of on the beat for Barcelona and Real Madrid, but then trying to do kind of my bit for Getafe, for your Rayo Vallecanos. And it was a good year to cover Rayo Vallecano last year.
So have you developed an affinity? Because I know there's quite a few sort of English language journalists in Madrid, aren't there? And the ones in Barcelona tend towards Barcelona, understandably. There's a bit of a Rayo Vallecano thing amongst some of the English speaking guys. Have you got the bug, but that might imply you caught Legionnaire's disease at the stadium at some point. But who do you like? What's your experience of watching football in Madrid?
Yeah, certainly since I came to Madrid, it's very hard not to get sucked into the Rayo Vallecano narrative, because it is just a really fun experience to go to the stadium, kind of beyond any of the kind of stuff on the pitch. You go to Rayo, there's such a good atmosphere around the ground. In it feels like you're there next to the players. I mean, you get a seat. I got a seat last season, and they didn't even tell me kind of where the seat was. But I got a couple of pair of tickets for a friend that was visiting, and we were sat literally behind the dugout. But the dugout is so close to the seats that it felt like you were there next to the substitutes. And so you just get an experience that isn't quite like anything else at that level of football. But even then, I mean, Getafe are probably, certainly international level, the most hated club in La Liga. But I still quite enjoy going to Getafe. I mean, it's an acquired taste, but there's something almost kind of, with Bordalas there, there's something almost kind of heroic about how little they care about what people think. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoy going to every ground in Madrid. I enjoy going to every ground that I go to in Spain. But certainly Rayo are probably the one that most make my heart sing.
So where do you, this is what I'm interested in as well, the state of play of Spanish football. I think we're always brutally honest, Terry, aren't we, about the things that we love about it, but also some of the shortcomings. I mean, the nature of the fixtures of the opening weekend. It's just extraordinary dribbling start to a season. So there are downsides to it, but there are lots of upsides as well, aren't there? And it's this fascinating combination of, you know, it's the best football country in the world has just been played out at the World Cup and won the World Cup, produce a brilliant amount of players. But then there is this sort of drama that goes on around La Liga. There's drama around football, but there's a kind of shoddy drama around La Liga at times.
Yeah, certainly. I think institutionally there's a lot of work to be done, and I think there's still very much a feeling, or you get a sense that Spanish football is run by kind of an old guard. I mean, Tebas obviously has been around for many years and many decades. You look at Luthan, he's not exactly kind of a breath of fresh air coming in with new ideas in the federation. So institutionally, kind of organizationally, if you look at it and compare it obviously to the Premier League, which we never tired of doing, there's things to be fixed. I think kind of on the pitch and in the academies, obviously, the World Cup win has really benefited. Certainly Tebas, I think he can now point to his kind of salary limit system and say, look, well, we're developing players. We've worked out a sustainable way of football, and it's benefiting Spain as a whole. So I think the World Cup win will be well received within the offices of La Liga. And it has to, I have to say, kind of you look at sometimes you get kind of these stories of kind of, well, Getafe obviously being unable to register players, Rayo Vallecano were obviously a disaster class in every season, it seems like, and then somehow they pull it out of the bag towards the end. But there's those stories where maybe La Liga needs to have kind of a harder hand with kind of the likes of Valencia, Peter Lim, Rayo. How are these kind of situations allowed to develop without kind of intervention? And then at the same time, you look at the likes of kind of Racing Santander, Deportivo, Malaga, the three clubs that have come up this season. Brilliant stories, but they've also kind of sanitized themselves as clubs. They've now got kind of a healthy academy system. There's stability on the pitch. There's a full stadium. So there's varying kind of different parts, and sometimes maybe it's too tempting to kind of take too broad a brush and say Spanish football's healthy, Spanish football's not healthy, because each individual case, as you say, it kind of confuses us and befuddles us.
Do you think the venture capital money been well spent? At the moment, we're seeing, I'm very much inclined to say yes at the moment, but obviously there's a long-term consequence to this because the clubs have essentially mortgaged a bit of their futures. But we are seeing, I think something that was long overdue, wasn't it, the state of the stadiums. Some of them looked like they were half abandoned building projects or poorly conceived, like Anoeta, you know, where the fans were miles away from the pitch and stuff. So you're looking at it now, and that seems healthier. Is that your view from there as well?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, football clubs invest money poorly on a daily basis, and so I feel like if La Liga have managed to kind of direct them to invest it in stadiums and facilities that benefit the fans, training facilities that benefit the players, I feel like that is probably a net positive. And obviously there's drawbacks, and many of the presidents kind of complain, ah, oh, well, we can't register players, so on, so on. But I mean, fundamentally, football clubs and Spanish football clubs don't have a track record that says that you can trust them to invest in the right areas, and some still aren't. But if I go to Osasuna at the weekend, their stadium is loud, it's noisy, it's really kind of modern stadium. If you go to Real Sociedad, as you say, Mallorca, grounds that have kind of redeveloped them, and I think they're probably producing more money as a result. And even Getafe, who are under kind of serious stadium works right now. If you go to Getafe in 2 years' time and the stadium's much nicer, you've got a roof over your head and it's pouring with rain, you're just more likely to go. So I feel like it has been probably a net positive, but as with anything, it comes with its drawbacks.
Yeah, like Celta and Levante. So I'm looking forward to seeing Celta Stadium because that's developed well over the last few years and their fan base. Hoping that's going to be finished when we restart. Levante have refurbished their stadium as well. So I think by and large, John, the money has been used well. Can I just touch on Getafe there? I did a guest appearance for Tottenham Hotspur TV at the weekend
Oh, yes.
in their friendly against Getafe. I'd done three of the pre-season games for Spurs, and they asked me about Getafe, and I said, "Whose idea was it to have a pre-season friendly against Getafe?" And it was surely they can't be that bad. Getafe flew in Saturday morning for a 3 o'clock kickoff. I saw pictures on their social media where they just landed at Stansted at like 11 o'clock. They went to the training ground, and when they got there, they asked to only play two halves of 35 minutes because haven't got enough senior players. They picked up injuries. Cristian Suárez, dreadful blow for him, going to be out for the season after a poor challenge from a Monaco player. So they didn't want to risk playing 90 minutes against Spurs at the training ground behind closed doors. So I thought perhaps they're not going to be the full-blown Getafe. They started off the first half with four senior players. The rest were kids. they were brutal. the kids were brutal. It was a shock to the system, to the Spurs players. Andy Robertson running around telling them, this isn't the World Cup final, calm down. And it was an absolute kick up. First half, second half, they played really well, Hetafe. They went 1-0 up, they could have won it. It was a really even game, full of kids, all athletic, all powerful, all strong, all know the Hetafe spirit, which would serve them well, because in total, I looked at the squad, it had about 11 senior players. And how they're going to keep doing that year after year. They've got European football this season as well. Hmm. They're still waiting to find out who they're going to play in the qualifier for the European Conference League. And I assume they're then headed back an hour's drive to Stansted and back on a flight again. It's why they entertain the idea of flying to London the week before the season starts for behind closed doors match at a training ground and not. Even I just don't get it. A week to go before the season starts. Why flying on the day? Ask for 2 35-minute halves instead of 45-minute and go back. A complete waste of thought. Planning was dreadful. But so, just to let everyone know, Hetafe are going to be exactly the same again.
Good. We don't want that to change. So another thing, Rory, living there. So do you play football yourself when you're in Spain, and how do you find that? How do you find the differences? Because I whenever I've spoken to Spanish people or people who live there, there are quite big differences from how we play in England. I think in terms of, I think there's a level of thought and intellectualism about football that doesn't really that gets scoffed at here, where people are a bit no, just get on with it. Whereas I think there's a conversation with Spanish people and they play the game in a different way. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do play football badly, but it is quite a culture shock from kind of Spain. And I think the main difference is in Scotland, at least kind of where I was growing up, you never get any time on the ball. And because there's maybe not necessarily the movements kind of integrated into midfielders or defenders or even strikers to kind of move for the ball when somebody receives it, you don't have those kind of 2-3 options in your head, or you don't have kind of the ability to kind of escape that pressure and play that pass. That's the main kind of difference I notice. And you get more time on the ball in Spain, but you're trusted to kind of use it better. And if you pick the wrong pass, then people are kind of more wise to it. Whereas in Scotland, at least it just feels like it's 100 miles an hour all the time. And you never get that kind of time or space to kind of think on the ball. So I'm a defender, so I will pick up the ball kind of off the goalkeeper, off a centre back, and you kind of get the time to think at least, but then you have to use the ball better. Whereas I think in Scotland, it's just make sure you don't make a mistake. And I think that probably you see that played out at the World Cup, where kind of Spain players are comfortable taking it under pressure. And it's either I know I can escape out this way, or I know I can kind of give a pass out that way. Whereas maybe in Scotland is the only thing I can speak to. I can't speak for England, but you get kind of a different feel for the game.
And I think I've said this before, Terry, to you, but I think there is a definite thing underpinning the success of Spanish clubs. I know the big two have got huge resources and Atletico to a degree as well. So they have chucked money around as well. But I do think that football intelligence underpins the success of Spanish football.
Yeah, and look at the coaches as well. I mean, we talk about the players, the benefits of not being able to spend freely and get into debt, producing your own young players. The league's full of probably about half a dozen managers this season won't be Spanish. I'm guessing off the top of my head. But the rest will be Spanish. And then you look at the Premier League, the Spaniards that have come over to the Premier League and other parts of Europe now. So the whole process it's been a slow build, but I'm pretty sure there'll never be a foreign manager in charge of Spain in my lifetime. Because they have a surplus of top quality coaches. And so there is an understanding of how they want the game to be played, that is developed with the players and it's developed with the coaches now. And they're not all the same. Not all the coaches are the same. My experience, and I know you agree, is all the coaches and all the kids in England, they are the same. So all the kids are being brought up exactly the same, and all the coaches are being brought up exactly the same. In Spain, there is different cultures and there's different types of coaches. They're all good coaches, but there's different cultures in different parts of Spain, which is really hard to explain to people in the UK who think that everybody plays like Spain and Barcelona. And probably the Spurs lot at the weekend probably expected Hetafe to knock it. They actually scored a really good goal with about 5 or 6 one-touch passes. But it comes as a shock to the system when you see some of the more teams that play direct football, but they still have good coaches in place, just coaching a different style. Whereas in England, I think everybody has been driven to play the same way, to coach the kids the same way. There's no variation there.
And just to kind of touch on what Terry was saying there, I think somebody asked me after the World Cup, I mean, how do you explain Spain's kind of continued success? And I think that is one of the main factors, is that kind of...
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Regional differences. You've got the Basque country, which is slightly more direct, slightly more physical. Basque players are very kind of proud of the way that they play football. You have the kind of the Barcelona style, and they kind of have their midfielders and in Catalonia that being kind of able to kind of control the game is much more kind of prized. And across Spain, you have all these different regions with slightly different kind of cultural tweaks, and I think all those regions competing against each other and kind of coming up with new ideas, kind of testing themselves against different cultures of play is something that really helps, because then that kind of breeds new kind of creativity, breeds new solutions. Whereas, as you say, maybe in other countries there's always kind of a desire to move all in one direction, and maybe you need kind of an overarching guiding principle, but you need that kind of competition internally to kind of generate a bit more creativity.
I reckon if I went to watch England, Spain under 18s with no knowledge of the players, I reckon I could at least half of the team I could tell you where they're from. I could tell you the Andalusian winger. I can tell you the back centre back or a centre forward. As Rory said, the Catalonia, the Barcelona type midfield player. There's a culture there that's different in places, and when you throw it all together and get the right balance, the right mix, it's working. But my point is, if I go and watch a young team play in England, I get slightly bored. It's the two teams playing exactly the same style, and it's a lot of passing out the back into midfield, square passing. I know I can predict centre-backs will have more touches and passes than anybody else. They're probably not centre-forward. There's different people rotating between 10 and 9 and the 6 and the 8. And I look at it and it's just, it's quite sterile. And it's hard to pick someone out who's actually going to make it, because they all look the same.
Yeah.
It's a worry, actually.
I think there was a clear move, wasn't there, after, I mean, you can trace it back to the 2010 World Cup, and they brought in the elite player performance plan, which was to get English kids on the ball and improve their technical quality. It made sense, but what it is, I think, is very much they took the Spanish, with a bit of German influence, blueprint, and basically stuck it into England, where it's not, and they called it, the FA called it the DNA. It's not the DNA. That is not the DNA of English football. I'm not saying it's a wrong thing, because, you know, if you want to succeed at the top level, you do need very good technical players. But the danger with it is, it's just a bit unthinking and a bit kind of, oh, right, Spain are good, let's play like Spain, and let's not. And to be fair, they don't change it every 2 years or 4 years. Spain had a dip in the middle of that period, didn't they? The national team, and they stuck with it, but it still. I agree with you, Terry, that it strikes that it's a bit plodding, because it's imposed from elsewhere.
Also, we had Pep. Pep transformed it. Everybody wanted to be Pep, and then everybody in the Premier League become a disciple of Pep. And if you didn't play like Pep, you were regarded as a dinosaur. And as Pep was here longer, we've seen Arteta move on to Arsenal, we've seen Maresca get various jobs. And those disciples have all moved on. And then people that didn't even know him, my team, Spurs, got Roberto De Zerbi. He wanted to be Pep, and he was getting thumped 5-0 by Pep, getting a pat on the back. because his team tried to play out the back. And we joked about it on our podcast, saying he's infiltrated and radicalised so many managers in the Premier League to play the way he wants them to play so he could beat them. So Pep had a massive influence on the Premier League. Good influence, don't get me wrong. I love Pep. He's possibly the best manager ever in the Premier League. But he did infiltrate football clubs in the Premier League to try and copy him and Manchester City, which is, it's not easy when you haven't got hundreds of millions to spend. Teams that didn't play that way got criticised.
Just to come in on that, a good story I've got as well is that I have a friend who kind of came through the academy at a Scottish Premiership side. And when he was kind of 16, 17, 18, they were showing him videos of Barcelona kind of 2010 and kind of Swansea, kind of under kind of Martinez and Michael Laudrup at the time. And trying to kind of implement that style, but in a Scottish football team where they've not grown up playing like that, they don't have that kind of muscle memory, or they don't have kind of an internal kind of basis of that. And then they get to the first team and they're asked to play in a completely different fashion anyway. So yeah, you kind of see that there was a desire to kind of imitate and to kind of impose that blueprint of success, but you didn't have kind of any of the infrastructure necessary to make that a success.
Yeah, fascinating. Anyway, this is enough positivity about Spanish football. Let's talk about the refs. There's this whole new set of stuff to fall out about this year, which is great. I'm looking forward to Jose Mourinho's first game in charge of Real Madrid. So 5 seconds to take a throw-in, 10 seconds to get off the pitch if you're being substituted. Otherwise, it's a minute's wait, isn't it? It's a minute wait if you go down and you're injured. VAR on corners now, which they say has got to be quick, but we all know the reality of VAR in Spain, about 3 minute VAR for a corner. And they're going to do the announcements on their mics, I think, as well. And if you're in the middle of an argument and you do that, you cover your face and then you can get sent off for covering your face. Only in an argument, though, so you are allowed to bitch about your friends, which is still do that. What do you think, Terry?
Is there anything on goalkeepers going down injured? Is that a UEFA one?
I think that's an IFAB one, so I think so. Yeah.
The goalie goes down injured.
Someone else goes off. Yeah. Yeah.
Bataya for Rayo does it every game when they're 1-0 up. 20 minutes to go, he gets cramp and he kills the game. Now they're talking about another player going off, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good one.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because at one point, we're also looking at, we're going to have the hydration breaks, aren't we, in the first part of the season because of the temperature.
Is that everywhere?
It's a temperature thing, isn't it? So there's a trigger point, isn't there?
Premier League as well, I guess.
Well, they were doing it in the Carabao Cup, weren't they, when it was 30 degrees at the weekend somewhere.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. But obviously in Spain, that's going to be quite a lot, isn't it? Certainly this time of year. So it's an interesting balance, isn't it, between, again, going back into that culture of Spanish football, because we're doing things to speed up the game because it can be quite frustrating, the stop start, at the same time bringing in measures to give players a break because it's too hot to play football at times. If you know the opening weekend, they could have to move that first game, couldn't they? So it's an interesting balance. I don't know what the answer is to get that right, but it definitely affects, I think, that culture of wasting time is to do with how hot it is to play football in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most of those changes kind of make sense. I think we'll end up kind of just coming back to the VAR side of it is the issue, because all of those changes are to kind of implement an increase in rhythm and an increase in kind of tempo and stop time wasting. But the biggest time waster and the biggest thing that interrupts the game is those VAR decisions. And so on the one hand, they're kind of speaking out of both sides of their mouth, because I agree with those changes, but if they can sort out the VAR, maybe we do need a time limit on those decisions and you need to get them correct. But yeah, I feel like until that gets sorted, we're not going to have kind of games, we're never going to have it free of kind of polemic and controversy in Spain. But it's always going to be kind of coming back to those VAR decisions. The stop starts, of course, there's the famous one at the Atleti against Barcelona at the Metropolitano. 6-7 minutes, the game stopped and it completely changed the game afterwards. So yeah, I feel like those changes are good. They're positive and I kind of welcome them. I think they mostly, for the most part, worked at the World Cup. But as with anything, it's humans interpreting it and you need kind of consistency across the board.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think it's and the drinks one. It's the drinks break. We've been doing that in Spain at the beginning of the, and the end of the season for a while, and it's not been an issue. Everybody understands it. If you're playing in the 40s in Sevilla, the temperatures in the 40s, everybody in the stadium needs a drink, just not the players. Mm. So that's been accepted. What we didn't like was we've done the see Alaves playing on a Tuesday, Monday night, and it's freezing cold, and we're stopping after 20 odd minutes because it's a drinks break. That doesn't happen. It won't happen. We got that in the World Cup, games where it was raining, indoor, in games in air-conditioned stadiums, and you heard the crowd booing. There was no need for it. So the temperature thing is the sensible option, and no one's going to complain about that.
Yeah, yeah. And for clarification, defenders are not allowed to handle the ball when it's been passed to them by a goalkeeper. I like the fact that they put that in. As if that needed clarifying. Yes, that was a handball. It's always been a handball, right? Rory, one last question. We're going to put you on the spot. Do you want to call who's going to win the league, or is it too close?
The last 2 years, I've called Real Madrid winning the league, so I fear for Barcelona. I think certainly if Barcelona do get the Rodri deal over the line, I'd have to make them favourites, just because I feel like, although Real Madrid have actually improved, I think they've had a good summer window. I think you can say that they're going to be a better team, and they've improved more than Barcelona. I don't know if they've quite made up that gap without Rodri, and ultimately Mourinho still has to solve the Mbappe-Vinicius conundrum. So until we kind of see evidence of that, I kind of have to make Barcelona favourites, which is a bad open for Barcelona.
Yeah, and Terry put you down for Atletico?
Yep, 15th season on the trot. I've got it right twice. And I claim all the credit in the world when they win it every 10 years. Yeah, I told you that. Told you they were going to win the league. Now, I think it's too early yet because there's still work to be done in the transfer window. So at this moment, I think it's... And I'd still include Atleti at the moment in the race for the title. If they need a better start. They never got this season going in La Liga last season. Brief little comeback around November, December, but the gap was always too big. They didn't win a game for the first five. They start with Malaga at home. They need to win that, and if they get off to a good start, they can challenge and should challenge. So the reason I'm saying that, Atleti might lose Alvarez and he's playing for Barcelona, and then you look at it thinking, oh, they look complete now, Barcelona, with Rodri coming in, and I'm still surprised that they've spent so much money on wingers and didn't keep Rashford. But they still need a centre forward. I thought at the end of last season, a quality centre back was needed as well. That hasn't happened. So the obvious places that needed strengthening for Barca haven't happened yet. But we've sort of been distracted by the fact that they're spending the money. They're probably going to get Rodri. 80 million on Anthony Gordon, decent money on Adeyemi. It's a weird transfer window for Barcelona. A good one in some ways, but they've got to fulfil the positions that needed fulfilling that were obvious.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to stay on the fence as well with you two. If any Patreons want to say it, I used to compile it, but as time has gone on, people are reluctant to sort of commit to it, understandably, in the middle of August when we've still got weeks to go and people don't know, especially because the World Cup, I think, delayed it, made it a bit late, didn't it? The start of this business. So there's a lot to be sorted out yet. And I take your point, Terry, that there are gaps in the Barcelona squad that make you fear for them just at the moment. But if they sign a couple sensibly, then it changes everything. Rory, it's been terrific talking to you. Thank you very much indeed. And come on again. We get a few guests on in the summer, so you'd be more than welcome. And I look forward with interest to your next your big transfer move that I'm sure will be in the offing soon. And Terry, are you in Spain? Do you know when you're going? Are they arranged to kick off time?
Well, I'm interested. I'm doing Sevilla Rayo. Is that one of the games that might be moved to kickoff time?
Or
is
but
that
it's, the... a, it's an evening game, isn't it? So,
yeah. I think it was 9 o'clock kickoff. I won't be surprised to see that's moved to 10.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not unusual for a 10 o'clock kickoff in Sevilla in August.
Yeah,
it kind of makes sense. So who'd have thought it was going to be hot in Sevilla in August?
Yes.
It's yeah, no, so I'm out there next week.
Yes, right. And as they say, stay hydrated. Rory, terrific. Thank you for coming on. Terry, we will speak again soon at the dribbling start of the season. And everybody, thank you for getting involved. Patreons, thank you for your continued support. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.